Well, the topic, what will you be doing this summer? And I want to just say that my expectation about life this summer is about the way I expect today to go and last week went. And that is that I am looking forward to continuing my work as a bishop of a very healthy and busy diocese, the Diocese of Texas. And that the diocese grew over this last year, just in the last 7 days, to give you a sense of the health and well-being of who we are. In the last 7 days, I had 4 visitations, and I did 250 confirmations. Including our visitation here on Saturday. Those are young men and women beginning to head into high school, but also a tremendous number of young adults and newcomers to the Episcopal faith. And that is about 5 times what most dioceses have in confirmations all year long, to give you a sense of size and scale. And we're not even through the first part of our year. And so we do this, 2 visits on a Sunday, 3 visits a week, constantly in the congregations, Bishop Harrison and myself. And so I know that that's going to continue, opportunities to be with people, to study Scripture, to preach and teach. And truly, the invitation to be with you this morning in this forum, this is my favorite stuff. I mean, just an opportunity to be in conversation with people. So I know that's going to continue. The work within the institutions are all very healthy and in the midst, not unlike yourselves recently, of raising funds, capital funds for projects. And whether or not it's the schools, Episcopal High School or St. Stephen's or the system or our retirement community, or whether we're talking about St. Martin's is hosting the Lord of the Streets luncheon today, and we have that street ministry and the ministry, of course, in Austin, El Buen Samaritano, dealing with immigrants and people who are paid very little and looking to make citizenship and get their GEDs and things like this. That stuff is going great. I mean, we have a lot to be proud of. And that's just going to continue. That work is just nonstop, and it's the most important work. I mean, it is what we're called to do, to preach the gospel, as we say, by word, but also in our deed. And so, you know, we're also going to ordain 10 deacons. And I'll continue to install. We've got a bunch of deployments happening. So as bishop, my guess is that work will be nonstop. And I'll take a little bit of a break to be bishop and then to be father full-time for a few weeks, right? And during that time, last year I built these giant forts. Tommy Telepson kind of came over to help me figure out concrete and how to... I think we actually built a small church in our backyard when we were all done, you know. But I don't have that kind of a project. It really is going to be more hanging out and enjoying my 2 daughters, getting them off to Camp Allen to enjoy summer camp. And Kaisa, now having reached 15, is actually going to be working there a little bit this summer. And I have a high school student, so as many of you know or may remember, all of a sudden they have like a schedule that competes with your schedule. And so trying to catch time, I've entered that odd time where I used to have my children's full attention when I was off, and now I actually have to begin to negotiate some of that with them. And so I've got a great family. Joanne and the girls are doing well, and we're looking forward to some time together this summer. I think last time I was with you, I talked about that black dog that pursues us, you know, that's constantly at our heels, and how we have to kind of deal with that spiritual darkness and bring it to bay and make a friend of it in order to survive. And so I imagine that during my time off, I will do a lot of fishing, saltwater fishing. Some fishing in Colorado. I had a day retreat this week in got to Port Mansfield. My hands were so sore after all those confirmations I had to take. And so that frames the important work pretty well. I mean, I think that's part of what's happening. We also have general convention thrown in there, the opportunity in which Episcopalians from 17 different countries come together to meet in council together, to worship, to pray, to do Bible studies, but also to pass legislation. And what I would say is, in all of this, and to begin to get to the meat of what I want to tell you today, I am ever more aware of how out of control I am in my life. That the culture that we live in creates what I would call a reasonable expectation that I am the master of my destiny. That if I live the right way, do the right things, then all will be well. And so I want to read you a poem somebody shared with me the other day. Briefly, it's called Invictus. Some of you may know it. It's by William Ernest Henley, a poet from Gloucester, England. And he wrote this in the 19th century. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pale to pale, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how changed with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. I am the master of my fate and the captain of my soul. The reality is that the world that I live in does seem to work in a particular way. Right. If I do the right things, if I have the right friends, make the right decisions, live a particular way, the world gives me enough feedback that I can begin to believe that I am the master and captain of my soul. And in fact, by doing certain things, I can provide well for my family, enjoy time off, right? Those are blessings because I've worked hard to achieve a level that allows such things. And the kind of wicked twist is that we begin to live out of that sense of control and destiny that we have manufactured for ourselves. The problem is actually twofold. There are a couple of, and so just to play with this a little bit, I think the first piece that is problematic is that the person, Russ had said, authenticity. To be the same person as bishop as you were before. But who is the me? You all see me, you perceive me, you see me with a funny collar around my neck and a purple shirt because I'm bishop, and you know the things that I do. That begins to project some things outside of the core of who I am. You might see me or imagine who I am as father and who I am as son. But all of those are pieces and parcels. There's a Greek word prosopon. They're masks. They're images of things that are projected outside of me that help to navigate the world a little bit. But they're not the me. They're just fractions and veiled images of the real inner me, that conversation that I have with myself when I got up this morning and was thinking about me, right? And we all have that. I mean, there's this inner person. There's the person that we project out in the midst of a situation like this, or that we will put on literally before we walk in the office or before we walk into our homes. There's this piece of us that we're constantly spinning out. And what happens as we are successful or things move on, we begin to live perhaps a little bit more in that master and captain role, which isn't the real me. And it begins to build the fact that maybe I'm getting better, actually, that maybe that the person inside of me, that person who questions, am I good enough, wearing the right clothes, am I saying the right things, am I doing the right thing, all of that external stuff that kind of gets lived out, all of that. The problem is that in that economy, as I live out of that, and I'm not really aware of the fact that I'm still the broken, sinful human being. I'm not actually getting better as a creature. My nature as a human being is not changing, you see. Right? But as I play out these roles, these prosopons, these images, and cast these out, and people take them up, and I begin to have some success with some and others, and so so this part of me drops off, and you don't see that part of me as much anymore. You don't see the hippie, long-haired, earringed artist that I was in college, because if I had showed up like that this morning, you would have thought, "What in the world just happened?" You know, where's? Yeah, some of you might have said, "Cool, that's awesome. Look at, he's really living into it." Right? So you try it on. I joked around and said, when I was in college, I wore cowboy boots and jeans and a white polo because that's what we wore. And then when the preppy phase came in, we got rid of the boots for a while, changed our name to Chip, and put on some penny loafers. And then I went to art school where that certainly wasn't accepted at all, and so I had to wear a lot of black, and that prepared me for the priesthood, and you had to kind of be real down. So you try all these things, and all the while I'm showing them on my own man, that I really have, but that's not what's happening. And so we begin to trade up, and then pretty soon what I think happens if we're not careful, and this is what I'm going to tell you, I'm doing this, I'm struggling to make sure in some way that I'm having a conversation about this real me instead of the fake me. I'm interested in me, that broken, sinful me, and the way God works on that through God's grace. And in situations when you're out of control, when things are going to happen beyond your control, if you're living in the master and destiny me, the master and captain of my soul me, I guarantee it's going to be a hard fall. I've been joking around with a friend this last week. I've decided that there's this new Christianity. It's called Christian karma. And that's where if you believe you do all the right things, you live by the right codes, you're nice to people. Kindness is kind of a new buzzword in that. If you just do all that, if you could just be the most perfect Christian person, then all the goodness will come to you. That will be that, you'll just see how good and blessed you are if you can just do that. And you really just need to work harder to get that Christian karma. But the lie is that doesn't change your nature. You see. And so as I kind of walk into this summer, I guess I want to be ever more aware that I am a sinful, broken person. And that actually my salvation my salvation depends on God only. Only. And just about the point, and this is hard, because I don't want my salvation to depend upon God, actually. Because I'm not sure I trust God that much, right? I mean, I'm just being honest about how the human heart works, right? I mean, the truth is that I'm not sure I want to leave it all up to God. I'm not sure I want to leave the politics of the church up to God. I'm not sure that I want to leave the conflict up to God. I'm not sure I want to leave the money. Sorry, Treasurer Bob Beal. I'm not sure I want to leave the money up to God. You see what I'm saying? I got to work pretty hard there. But what I'm trying to tell you is that somehow what I want to do this summer is I'd like to continue to work on this authentic person, this sinful, broken person, and get in touch about all of the ways in which I'm projecting and living into a world where I think I'm in charge. And somehow I think my salvation is worked out in the midst of those two realities, the struggle between the man who desperately wants to hold on to power, authority, control, and the sinful, broken human creature that longs for the saving grace that is only offered by God in Christ Jesus. I'd actually like to figure out how to do that more. I was listening to a friend Paul Zoll's podcast this week, and he quoted a book, a little story called The Devils of Loudon by Aldous Huxley. And it's an awful story about Sister Jean, who destroys a clergyman and all these people by lies as a young person. And he said this, he quoted out of the book about Sister John, Sir John. With part of her mind, Sister Jean was probably convinced that she actually was the heroine of her own comedy. Did her illusions persist to the very end? Or did Sir Jean at least in dying, die herself? Not as a heroine before the footlights, but as herself behind the scenes. It was absurd, this backstage self of hers. It was pathetic. But if she would but acknowledge the fact, if she could only cease to impersonate the authoress of the interior castle, all might still be well, as long as she did not pretend to be someone else. There was a chance. I don't want to pretend to be someone else. That's what I don't want to do this summer, or do this summer. Like to not pretend to be somebody else. And that doesn't mean that I will stop working hard, right? It's not like tomorrow I'm going to show up at the office in a bathrobe and pajamas and a cup of coffee and some slippers. It's like, saved by grace is it's awesome. It's my story. I'm going to stick to it. I have just enough Protestant work ethic to not probably be comfortable with that. But I do think there's some comfort in knowing that that's not all up to me. There is something that's gained in resting on God's grace. And I find that as I pray on that and sit with that and struggle with that, I find that God moves from an impersonal, uninterested God to a very personal God. My heart longs for thee. I find a God very, very interested in my soul. I find a God who who is in control and is working his purposes out. And there is, I think, in the midst of owning my sin-sick soul, as the hymn goes, right, that I actually am grateful that his purposes are not my purposes. And I find a God who is grace-filled and powerful. I may not have all the answers. I may not do it all right. I might not say the right things. I will guarantee to let you down because I'm human. But I also find a full measure of grace in that. Being redeemed through Christ, that the power that God has to capture me and you and others and bring us along some kind of weird, mixed up way. I have a faith that believes it's all being gathered in somehow. But I think this summer, as I look forward, I just don't want to pretend to be anybody else anymore. And there's some goodness in that. And it's not like I'm having this great epiphany now. It kind of works on you when you choose to do this all the time. When you get asked. So bishops don't say that they're called. Bishops say they're persuaded. That's actually what it says in the prayer book. The bishop has to say, I'm so persuaded that I'm to be a bishop. Right? I think you're nuts, but I'm persuaded that that's what I'm supposed to do. But you come into people's lives. 250 people's lives. Lives of parents and children and individuals who say, I believe in a grace, God of grace, who invites me to depend upon him. And you see that. You see them choosing to follow that God. It reminds you on a regular basis when you do that, and you are forced to listen to them choosing and saying, I recognize I'm going to do some evil and some bad things, but I just could keep trying turning, you know. Return to the Lord, turn over, turn back. It works on you. So that's what I'm going to do this summer. I want you to do it too. That's what I'd say. I want to invite you onto my summer journey, spiritual journey. I'd like you to, I actually don't want you to work harder. I'd like you to sit back a little bit this summer. Figure out all those places where you're spending energy with me. And maybe allow God to be present in those. And allow God to be the grace-filled God that God is. See what happens. It might be a pretty restful summer, actually. No matter what the world throws at you, it might actually be a pretty grace-filled, restful, reinvigorating summer. and the world might actually be changed by a group of men in the city of Houston, not working less hard, but just knowing it doesn't all depend on it. You don't actually have to die on the white horse. You don't have to die in battle. God's done that already. So, that's my thoughts this morning. A little just reflection. Now we get to have some conversations. What do y'all want to talk about? What did that make you think of? What did that bring up inside of you?